I am 47, the 29th of April 2000 to the 28th of April 2001. Over. For Sale by John Shepherd. It's a glorious day in the early summer of 2000, and I find myself in a lay-by on an insignificant B road in the barren moorlands of the north of England. I'm waiting to take a photograph of a sign which I very recently attached, by means of cable ties, to a nearby post, and one of many such signs which I have cable tied to a series of similar posts, fences, railings and gates over the course of the last 2 days. I am currently part way through a journey which will not only come to define this particular year of my life, but also several years to follow. But right now, in the moment, I am unaware of this fact.
A smell of sulphur? I don't get it. Is it some kind of fart joke?
I'd assumed that the Ramblers wouldn't take such notice of the sign. Perhaps they'd glance at it, then quickly continue their trek and remove themselves from the otherwise perfectly framed photograph that I am now very eager to take. I still have a few hundred identical signs in the back of my Land Rover and a significant amount of country to cover. My plan, like a lot of my plans, is proving to be a bit more complicated than I'd initially assumed. Drive from Southampton Docks to Dounreay Power Station, keep to the back roads, stop every couple of miles and lash one of the signs to a suitable fence, railing or lamppost, take a photograph and then move on. In practice, there are fewer country back roads and ideal places to tie a sign to between Southampton and Dounreay than you might imagine. And the heap of signs still to be attached isn't diminishing anywhere near as quickly as I'd prefer.
Maybe it's a protest or something political. They're not planning to build a quarry round here or something, are they?
I sigh and lower the camera, realising that I've overlooked something fundamentally important about the whole process of rambling. Rambling is never about the destination. It's always about the journey, about the things that you see on the way and the discoveries that you make. The newly erected sign might be the most interesting thing that these ramblers have come across all day. A curiosity worthy of contemplation and discussion. I should have recognised the fact sooner, because, somewhat ironically, I am also in the middle of a journey, looking for a sign. Since a very early age, I've had a firm belief that enlightenment and a sense of purpose can usually be achieved through the medium of a good road trip. Some might say that this is a belief form of a misspent childhood, years watching lazily written films and reading the wrong types of books. But what came first, the road movie cliché or the inalienable truth that there is a magical transformational power to any pilgrimage? Seeking a spiritual awakening? Forget transcendental meditation. Get on the road. The bigger the ritual you build around your road trip, the better. Draw shape on the map. Think carefully about what the rules should be. Depart on a day when the planets align. Our distant ancestors placed these routes for a reason. The ancient highways and byways of this land tap into the power of the landscape, and every one of them has its personality, its own wants, needs and demands. Follow the rituals. Keep an open mind. Focus. Please the road gods, and you will be rewarded. Did you ever wonder why I once made a record which was essentially a 10-minute mantra of motorway destinations?
Why is it priced in foreign money anyway? That doesn't make sense. There aren't many folk round here with dollars to spend. Do you think it's something to do with that bloke over there? The one with the camera?
I had half a mind to approach the group, engage, explain my problem. Would they understand? Or would it just sound like I had a very bad case of buyer's remorse? As you probably already noticed, I've never coped particularly well with buyer's remorse. But something in the manner of the lead ramblers makes me cautious to approach him.
I bet it's an advert, probably for one of those weird dot-coms you keep hearing about in the news. That'll be it, a dot-com. They should be bloody ashamed of themselves. They should, going around polluting the dales with rubbish like this.
The annoyed rambler starts pulling violently at the sign. The cable ties give way with only a few tugs. When I first set out on this endeavour, I had an idea that the trail of signs that I left in my wake would stay in place for at least a few days before the person whose job it is to remove unauthorised signs and such like got round to clearing them all away. But having one of my signs removed before my eyes, before I'd even had time to photograph it in situ, was an unexpected turn of events. Perhaps I should put another one up once the ramblers had moved on. It would be a shame to have spent so much time here with nothing to show for my efforts. And it's not like that I haven't got signs left to spare. Or would that be breaking the rules?
I'm going to find out who this Richard Long dot-com guy is and give him a piece of my bloody mind. I'm going to take this sign, chop it up into 1,000 pieces and bloody send every bloody one of them back to him in an envelope. Envelopes without a stamp on it. That'll teach him.
Chopping up a Richard Long into 1,000 pieces. That gives me an idea. Perhaps the rogue gods have given me something to take away from this stop after all. I turn the key in the ignition and, with ideas already coalescing in my mind, I depart for Dunray and the next phase of the project.
Under, entering the forest, by Leela Abbas. It was in the mornings that I first noticed it. It was taking me just that bit longer to get to the bathroom of a day. The stairs down to the kitchen seemed steeper, and the distance between my fingers and bootlaces appeared to lengthen as the days returned to summer. I'd started making those little oof noises when I got off the sofa. I was turning the radio up just that extra notch, all the better to listen to In Our Time. Since when was I enthralled to Melvin Bragg and his dragging delivery, the driest of guests opining on the legacy of Goethe on 18th century scientific thought? I mean, who cares? Turned out, I do. I knew bus timetables inside out and wrote letters to the paper about the implementation of the local traffic calming schemes, which didn't even affect me. The kids had gone past the stage of laughing at Dad the entertainer and were now sighing at the crazy things their father was coming out with. The outdated pop culture references, the obsession with the music on cassette, and 1970s sitcoms, the withering glances and the covert non-verbal twitches shared with their mother were wearing away at our relationship. There was no running away from it. I was getting old. Now, aging never even entered my mind as a mere stripling in my mid-30s. It was something that happened to other people. And now here it was. The wolf of aging wasn't exactly at the door. but he definitely entered the forest. It started to keep me awake at night. The insomnia fed the insecurity with late-night snacks of paranoia. I would start to wonder if I'd ever sleep again. Occasionally, the Scissor Man would visit, and I'd have to obey his demands. Too many mornings, I'd blame the newly holed garments on the dog. Remarkably straight lines for a cocker spaniel. He'd look at me with reproach over his hush money bonios. Only so many times he was willing to take the rap for the stupid human. In the end, as the sleeplessness grew in confidence, the dust sheets we squirreled for the endless decorating bore the brunt of the scissoring. Maybe I was sick of the painting. I had always sold myself as the handyman, the practical one, the neighbour you'd knock on to ask for help if your door needed planing or there was a weird buzzing in the living room that you couldn't locate. I just couldn't do it anymore. Every time I saw those roller sleeves coming out of the cupboard or had to drive out to Wicks to pick up more wall fittings, that inner voice would start up again. I hated it. I couldn't tell anyone how much I hated it, but I did. The constant mess had started to wear me down. The dribbles of gloss on the kitchen drainer, the cracked plaster that refused to paint up no matter what I filled it with. The house seemed to be constantly on the move. It wouldn't stand still, and I made sure that I knew I was pulled along with it regardless. I lay awake, wishing we could move. They were putting up a small cluster of new builds a few miles away. I would drive past and envy their insulation, their true walls, their legendary 10-year warranty. Imagine 10 years without having to stuff tights in the gap between the skirting board and the crumbling stone walls to plug the howling gaps. 10 years without scrubbing the black mould off the bathroom ceiling. 10 years without the daily mousetrap check. Mostly house mice, the occasional vole. 10 years. So it went on, eating away at my dreamless thoughts. I was outnumbered, outgunned, outvoted. The family had seceded from domestic comfort and saw our home as a character property, rejecting what they saw as the sterility and boxed-up living of the new houses. And so on we shivered, my resentment brewing. I think it was the gradual nibbling of my memory which really started to eat away at me. I was fraying at the edges. I couldn't decide if it was lack of sleep and the constant DIY performance anxiety or if I really was starting to lose my marbles. I'd watched elderly family members being gradually eroded by the demons of dementia. My father retreated into the embrace of the 1930s, being not perfect on the way a great aunt would smooth out the greaseproof covering that week's boiled ham to cut down for lavatory paper. The security of the old, even at a distance of 70-odd years, would cushion the constant knocks of the loss of the present. He never lost his words, though. He still aced the countdown conundrum round on the television, even if he couldn't tell you what he'd had for breakfast. When he started really kicking my arse at Scrabble, I started fearing for my own unfolding future. I had started writing everything down. Jobs to do, shopping lists, people to phone. I needed my paper anchors to keep me from drifting. I'd begun to forget words and actors. No chance. Trying to explain who had been in what before required a level of interpretation bordering on psychic transference. Objects stayed on the hall table for days, waiting to be taken upstairs. It worried me. No, it didn't. It scared me stupid. I was looking into the abyss of old age and I wanted to be away, away, away from the edge. Friends tried to tell me it was perfectly normal. The ones I airily mentioned it to, at any rate. No one wanted to discuss the gradual unwinding, the quickening of life's pace. It was only a few years ago that I never even considered contemplation of the dying of the light, and now here I was, preferring an antiseptic malt and a decent jigsaw to a night dancing the clock around. Either way, the sun still rose.